Hello and welcome to One Inch Pie Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer. I'm coming to you 2 days in a row. Hopefully I'll get the second episode posted actually, the same day as I'm recording it. I'm currently in a familiar spot if you've followed me for years, and I'm in my minivan, so we're back to the original iteration of this podcast. And I'm sitting in the woods, the parking lot of the woods where I run, and I have a lot of insight and thoughts. And before I even started running today, I just was struck with a whole bunch of things that I felt like were really important to talk about now that I've got the ball rolling, and I really just wanted to get them out while I'm thinking about them and while they're clear in my mind. And so if you hear the ambient noise of people arriving with their dogs and kids and cars, car doors slamming, I hope that you'll be able to roll with it. Okay, so in part two of yesterday's podcast, I talked about how necessary it is for us to and again, I just really want to be so clear that I in no way want to shame somebody who just doesn't feel ready, who just can't do it for whatever reason. Maybe you're in a life circumstance where right now it's just not a time that feels tenable for you to add yet another piece of drama I hate that word regarding, facing and healing from assault or abuse. But if you don't have, currently the resources, either personal or whatever time, the bandwidth, shall I say, to take on something else, to really sort of dive into something as dramatic as this right now, I don't want you to feel shame. I don't want you to go into a shame spiral and to shut down. And because what happens when we do start to feel shame about having silenced ourselves over the years is that we will find our mind will help us to find various justifications for that. And some of them are really damaging, like, was it really so bad? Or are you making a bigger deal of what happened? Are you imagining it? Or did you deserve it? Or, that kind of really unhealthy coping mechanism. And actually, that is a coping mechanism that a lot of predators and other people who are afraid of the truth will play into. Right? And so I need to try and stop saying so much. So I'm just going to take deep breaths instead. So when you start to go down those roads, know that it is a coping mechanism combined with a lot of social conditioning. And I certainly do not want to trigger that by making people feel urgent or pressured or on some kind of timeline to do their healing on my schedule, because I do not have a eye into your life. I do not know where you're at. I do not know your timing, and I don't have any kind of judgment for people who aren't ready, because like I said, it took me so long to be ready. And while I personally regret that I didn't have the support and the understanding earlier of what needed to be done for me to completely heal, and I feel like it could have saved me decades and decades of misery and helped me to be a much healthier mother and prevented me from passing certain amounts of that trauma onto my own children, I also don't know what, was supposed to happen. And I think that's something else that that really needs to be addressed, not in terms of, handing it all over to some unseen force, which is not something that I completely don't identify with, but I do feel like we do have a certain amount of healthy autonomy in our lives and that we should make use of it. But I also don't think hearkening back to yesterday's episode, that it is our business in trying to protect the and map out everybody's experience of the world. And that actually includes our kids. But if I'd like to be honest, you know, if I'm going to be honest, and I always strive to be that here, yes, I do wish that I'd heard messages such as the one I'm giving in these podcasts early in my life, and was able to access that strength to expose the truth and get the support I needed and complete my healing process earlier. Of course I do. But at the same time, I'm also at peace with when it happened. So that ramble aside, I just want to sum it up by saying, please don't feel pressured. Please don't feel shamed in any way if this is not the right time. Sometimes it just takes a lot of this messaging from various sources to percolate for long enough before the right moment where you can be in the right space in your life to heal and to deal with this kind of major step forward emerges. So let's, put that aside for a moment. But I just really hope that everybody understands that timelines are very, very personal. Okay, so what I wanted to talk about a little bit more today is about how, and I did brush on this somewhat yesterday, is about how others react to us, and not necessarily people that we would have assumed would give us pushback. So I think a lot of us assume that if we come forward with the truth, there might be pushback, certainly from the people who have the most to lose from us telling the truth, right? So that would be the perpetrator themselves, whoever is a supporter or a fan of that person, whoever's in their group. I think most of us are fairly realistic that there's going to be pushback, there's going to be skepticism. We have sadly been exposed to enough of it in the world. We've seen it in our societies. We've seen that victims and survivors are often treated very, very unkindly. And that is something that I think most of us are realistic, and why it's such a struggle to get survivors ready to tell their story. And I also talked about why I ended up personally going very public with my story, and how that was a last resort, and how I did strive over the years to be heard and understood and not undermined, and to solve the issue. First of all, I tried so hard to gaslight myself into believing that I could solve the issue just me alone, without ever confronting my abuser. Even as the abuse continued, I really found sort of temporary, shall I say, comfort and survival in the concept of giving it over to Jesus. Okay. And that, like I say, that was a lifeline at the time. And maybe it's the only act, you know, maybe that was a really good move. Maybe there would have been nobody I don't know. I just don't know. And I don't really want to rewrite history wondering if ands. But that's something that I did. And so I'm super cognizant of and sympathetic to people who will try to avoid the very difficult and painful work of healing through transparency by dealing with it themselves. It's just not a very successful method. It's called spiritual bypassing, really. And it's trying to use spirituality or religion to bypass what psychologically needs to happen. And I am a very spiritual person, as I think is apparent. But I also do believe in science, and I've experienced enough of how psychology works, even when I resisted it tremendously because I was so afraid to do that work and to open that can of worms. And I've just seen the contrast, and it's undeniable. Like, there's certain ways in which brains work and psychology works, and the kind of trauma that I experience actually changes the shape of the brain. It changes the wiring of the brain, and it shows up on brain scans and x-rays, that the shape of the brain of childhood trauma victims or other traumatized people, and you can see under brain scans that different areas light up. And so healing is actually a very literal and physical manifestation, and that does happen through the tools that we use in psychology to rewire the brain and heal it. So as much as I tried to do the spiritual bypassing, and I sympathize with anybody who's trying to do the spiritual bypassing, it just doesn't work. And so as much, you know, victims do it, definitely can attest, but so do people who might hear your story. And that's where it really gets very painful and complicated. So we've got, you know, a lot of people in the world that we always assume will have our backs. They are kind and they're gentle and they are good people and they're sympathetic in all of our troubles. If you get sick, you have a tragedy in your family, you're struggling, these are people who are always there for you, and you start to assume and believe that they have your back and you're good friends, and indeed they are. And then something like this comes up, and you have brought the truth forward to either in a very public manner, or you've just included a few people, and then you start to get pushback against people who you truly believed would have your back. And that's excruciating, right? Understandably, because this is the hardest thing that ever happened to you, arguably the most damaging thing that ever happened to you, and you're screwing up enormous amounts of courage in order to bring it forward, and you're not getting the kind of support that you have become accustomed to receiving from these trusted people that you know in your heart are good-hearted people who wish the best for you. Suddenly they stonewall. They look at you blankly. They don't say the things that you need to hear. This has happened to me with my closest allies, who I just imagined would just sort of drop everything and say, "What? How can I support you?" You know, as they had in every other crisis I had in life. People will distance themselves. If you're honestly, that's kind of the best, if they can't deal with what you're telling them because they are personally triggered. And that's what I'm coming back to, is that almost always people like this had a stake in your silence, or they're truly very good people and they want to support you, but they are personally triggered and afraid of their own demons and what this means for them. If you're normalizing doing frightening, scary things, it pulls on their idea or their sort of inner knowing that they really need to do that eventually too. And that is so scary. Think about it like this. If you are eating really unhealthily, if you're not exercising, and you can tell that your health is just, you know, both mentally and physically, you're just feeling sluggish, you're feeling horrible, but you're kind of in this cycle that you just don't feel ready to make changes. I think this is a really like accessible example and metaphor for a lot of us who sort of just sort of hunkered down over the course of the pandemic, right? A lot of us who ordinarily would exercise very, you know, regularly, changed our exercise routines and sort of scaled back on that, and started to comfort eat a lot more and just sort of cocooned. And that was, you know, a survival instinct, which nobody needs to feel any kinds of shame for. But what if you're at that point now, and I think a lot of people are at the point where they're like, okay, I'm ready to get back into life. I'm ready to resume my normal health habits. I'm ready to get back into my fitness routine. I'm ready to sort of stop eating as much as I did, or start eating a little more healthily, and stop turning to comfort foods like I was at the height of the pandemic. I'm ready. I'm ready. Or maybe they're ready to start going out and hanging out with people. And you're like, I'm not. I still have massive social anxiety or whatever. And then you start to see people like that, and they're like jumping around in your face and being like, okay, time to exercise. And they're like pouring their green smoothie, and they're exercising, and they're planning parties and going out. And you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. I am not ready. And that, what? That can trigger a sense of terrible anxiety, honestly. Like, what, this train of real normal life is headed out of the station without me. I am not ready. And that, not just anxiety, but the anxiety can manifest in hostility towards the people who are ready. Am I right? I think a lot of us will probably resonate with that example, because we've all seen people who are ready for things in their lives that we're not ready, but we feel like maybe we should be ready for, or maybe we eventually need to get ready for, right? Okay, so it's the same thing. Unfortunately, the world has more survivors, more victims of abuse and assault than we can even, in our darkest imaginings, believe. It's truly horrible how much more of an issue this is than we realize. And there is an incredibly high chance that the people that you choose to reveal this, or unburden yourself on with, and tell this terribly hard thing so courageously, have had their own brush with trauma, and they have not yet dealt with it. And so their response to you is going to be negative or neutral, but not supportive. And that is painful. So, so painful. And you have every right to feel a huge pang of pain, perhaps fear that, that nobody else will. If my best friends won't, then who will, right? And to feel like this isn't how it was supposed to be. I was supposed to come forward and unburden myself and be embraced and be believed. And now I'm just getting this weird coldness that, and I feel like I'm being abused all over again often, right? That is, I think that's, how I felt initially, was my worst and darkest fears have come to pass. When I sort of started dabbling in hinting at the truth to my most trusted people, engaging their responses, and sort of, and honestly, that was my mom, and maybe, sort of gauging, as kids do, even the energy in the room, how it would change when issues of abuse would come up, and seeing how antsy and uncomfortable and stressed out she looked, and assuming, oh, she can't cope with this. I can't possibly experience real abandonment, even though I've been emotionally abandoned by her, kind of what I sense deep in my soul was her looking the other way. I can't experience it in an overt way if I risk telling. And ultimately, that's exactly what happened. I did experience it in an overt way. She didn't support me in a healthy, good, she just didn't support me in the way that I needed and deserved to be supported. She was both a stakeholder in my silence, and she was also, I am very sure, personally triggered. And I'm sure that, I'd love to give her the benefit of the doubt, and I do, that she wished she could have. There was a part of her, that wishes she was braver and that she wasn't damaged herself and all that. But the fact remains is that the impact that it had was the same, that I was abandoned. And it's scary and it's painful. And I'm here to still tell the tale, right? And I think that people need to really recognize that there is this bizarrely unfair narrative that some folks sort of hold to, that the way that a victim chooses to tell their truth is should somehow be managed by the public's idea of propriety. And that's ridiculous. Somebody said, gosh, and I think it's actually a really prominent person or writer that said, tell your story or tell your truth or write your truth. And I'm obviously paraphrasing this. If people deserved to be, if people, really botching this one, really botching this one, but I'm sure you've heard it. Tell your truth, just, you know, the way it was, the way it happened. If people wanted you to remember them more fondly, they should have treated you better, something along those lines. And I don't know if I quoted Glennon Doyle in her most recent podcast, and everybody needs to listen to that podcast. She's only got two episodes out so far, and they're both absolute gold. But she said, you are responsible for telling the truth in life, regardless of what it is, whatever the truth is. You are responsible for telling and living your truth. And the rest of the world is responsible for how they deal with it. That's not your deal, though. That's not your problem, how they process it. And I think that's where we get everything so very, very twisted, don't we? We assume that our truth-telling needs to be managed in a way that we can manage the reactions of everybody that might hear it. And that's impossible, right? Completely impossible. We'd like to have some sort of sense of control, but it's an illusion of how people will receive our truth, because everybody receives the truth through their own personal lens of experience. And I think this is why it's so important that we get the word out about how important it is to listen to and believe survivors, and how a healthy, you know, and what a healthy response to survivors telling their truth is, and all that, because we do need to change this weird narrative that we have all absorbed, that we are not only responsible for telling our truth, but if we can't tell it in a way that will absolutely guarantee that it will hit in the way in which we hope and intend, we shouldn't tell it at all. Or that if we tell it and then it gets misinterpreted by somebody else, somehow we're the failure. And I suppose there are some cases in which messaging can be very, very botched. But if you're telling the truth about your abuse, or your assault, that your responsibility ends there, to tell it to whomever it is and in whatever way you choose to. And then it's everybody else's responsibility to deal with it the way they need to deal with it and process it the way they need to process it. That's their work to do. And when we burden survivors with this idea of you not only, you really should come forward, but not like that, right? Because this is in an inappropriate forum, or that might hurt unintended people, or that's tacky. I saw somewhere somebody said, "Oh, is this really the forum for this? This is tacky." Please understand that those responses have nothing to do with you. Those responses have to do with people's fear of hearing and needing to process the truth or do something with it. And it has nothing to do with you, and it's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to heal yourself. And telling the truth is how we do it. So back to my story when and like I've said over and over, and I'm not saying this over and over because I want people to necessarily believe me, or I want to sort of frame myself as somebody who was so careful and tried everything not to hurt other people, because I'm very comfortable in the knowledge that's who I am. And I know at this point, anybody who doesn't believe me about that is not going to believe me now, is not going to change their minds. It's not really something that I want to spend a lot of energy on. And this is not about my image control. I just really want to tell the story so that others can relate to how painful it is when a survivor is questioned, not just about their story, but in the method or the forums that they use to get it out. And a lot of people will go a very public route because they don't have any other recourse. Almost always, that's the reason. They have tried to deal with it one-on-one. They've tried desperately to deal with it, even knock by knock. Like I said, you know, there's different phases I went through. I tried super hard to deal with it personally. Then I tried hard to express my concerns to my abuser and how important, and my concerns, to be honest, at that point, as damaged as I were. Was that my abuser was going to go to hell for what he had done if he didn't tell the truth. And I was super preoccupied with him, you know, going to our Mormon temples, attending church or holding the priesthood or whatever it was when I was part of the Mormon church unfaithfully. That was a huge, huge, terrible concern because I'd been groomed to worry about him first. And I was wired for kindness, frankly, which is one of the reasons why I was targeted. So that was my sort of preoccupation, was that I would go to him and say, you know, I'm worried, like, what's going to happen to you? And he would be like, don't you worry about me. I've dealt with everything. And, you know, so it wasn't, you know, my motivation in trying to deal with it with him at first was not a sort of for my own healing, but for his preservation spiritually. Then I became very worried about, you know, the siblings that remained at home, and I was stressed about that. And so I went and told my Mormon bishop, and I told him just, you know, and he, I think I had one who really handled it badly and one who was a really good support and sort of probably gave me what I, as much, gave me the support and the permission to not do what I wasn't ready to do. And he assured me that I was not responsible for taking care of other people. I was responsible for healing myself. And he didn't pressure me to tell because he knew at that point I was terrified. I was beyond terrified. It was a cataclysmic concept in my mind to tell. So I did sort of go through these different phases, and then it was so difficult to even tell my husband. And then I tell a therapist, and the therapist started to hint at, you know, maybe you've got to come forward with this. And I shut that therapist down and didn't go to therapy for years because I didn't want to hear that what was wrong with me was trauma, was childhood trauma and PTSD. I wanted to believe it was anything that. It was garden variety depression. It was postpartum depression, and I really kind of lashed out at the idea that this therapist was trying to do what I was not ready to do. So I do have a ton of sympathy, both for survivors who aren't ready to tell their story yet, and also for people who act weird and sort of lash out at the wrong folks, including very tragically victims, because their fears are triggered. Their fear of and their knowledge of what they need to do is triggered and terrified. I've been there and I get it. And I just, my reasoning for going into this once again and so sort of explicitly is twofold. I want survivors to understand that it has nothing to do with them, that none of the responses of the people around them have to do with them being wrong in the way that they told their story whatsoever, that the response that they get from the world has nothing to do with them. It doesn't reflect on them. It doesn't reflect on them telling their story wrong. It also doesn't reflect on them needing to have not told their story. It's not a sign that you were wrong in telling your story if you get backlash. Backlash is predictable in these situations because it's so loaded, because there's so much fear, because there are so many triggers, because some people, like I keep saying, are invested in you keeping that lie, and other people are just too triggered to hear your truth. So that's the one reason I'm reiterating this. The other reason is that I'm telling people who will hear from survivors and will be in the position at some point in their life, no doubt. And hopefully you are the kind of person, if you're listening to this, you are somebody who's invested in being somebody who can be there for other people and being someone who can hear this and be a proper support and direct people to the proper channels of help. In sending the messages to your children who are watching how you respond to others, that you are a safe place, that you are someone that people can trust to come to. And this is the irony, is that, you know, my brother and I have spoken about this a lot, that there were members in our family, and in our church and in our community and whatever, who have gone through to great lengths over the course of their lives to model themselves as people who are there for other people. You know, we can think of one relative in particular who we feel deeply, deeply, deeply betrayed by, because you know, she was trained to, you know, professionally to be someone who was there for people. She presented herself as very sympathetic to us as victims. And in the end, she was a proxy for the perpetrators. She was sympathetic to them. She was feeding them information. She wasn't a good support to us. And it was so devastating. And then she sent us the messaging that we were unforgiving, or we had done it wrong, or like let us know that we were hurting other people. And we were at first devastated, then outraged, maybe devastated, confused, and then got to outrage. Like, why are you telling us that this truth has hurt other people? Why aren't you telling the person who hurt us that them hurting us has hurt other people? And that's the thing, you know, often people just bypass. It's so much easier to just come at the victim, to shoot the messenger. Yes, people do get hurt. Like I talked about yesterday, people will get hurt by hearing the truth of such atrocities. It will cause grief. People who care about you and love you will feel deeply grieved. My husband and children are deeply grieved and even traumatized over hearing my story. And it is also true that they are healed by hearing my story and understanding where I was coming from all these many years. So both of these things exist, and it's absolutely true that pain will result. But that pain was not executed by you. You telling the truth is a positive and a neutral in terms of pain. It has nothing to do with you. You didn't bring this pain into the world. The person who hurt you brought this pain into the world. And the fallout and the ripples of what they did to you is causing pain. But your truth telling is not bringing pain. It is only bringing healing. And we need to go back to the source. Whenever we are tempted to blame somebody for upsetting the apple cart and opening the can, and there's worms everywhere, and now what? You who opened the can are responsible for this pain. No. The person who put the freaking worms in the can in the first place. Such an ugly analogy. But ultimately, that person is responsible for the pain. And we never must forget that. And we need to become so much better as a society of reminding each other of this, as painful and triggering as these stories are to hear. They are not the fault of the victim. If you're in pain, or you're experiencing rage, or you are sad or triggered or disillusioned with the world, or whatever it is, that's not about the very brave survivor who came forward and told their story. That's about who did it to them. And I just cannot overemphasize how much enormous damage is done by people getting that confused, getting that mixed up. Well-meaning people, truly good-hearted and well-meaning people, have come to me and my siblings and to so many other survivors. I've heard countless survivor stories since I have told my story. And they are so heartbreaking in that good, well-meaning people will come to a survivor who screwed up their courage and laid it all on the line and took this enormous, brave, brilliant, beautiful risk, and will tell them, you did that wrong. You need to forgive people. You need to have a more forgiving heart. It will heal you. No, it will not heal you if you are holding all that toxicity inside of you. I have forgiven countless people who have done awful things to me, but not before I was able to process them. Before I was able to process them and speak about them, I might have thought I'd forgiven them. I really told myself I'd forgiven them, but that anger had to go somewhere, and guess where it went? Inwards. Turned it inwards. Self-sabotage, self-harm, suicidal ideation, because that, when you mess with somebody's most sacred autonomy, their body, their essence, their being, who they are, and especially if you do it to them when they're a kid, that doesn't just evaporate. That pain goes somewhere. And if it doesn't get well placed, if the responsibility isn't taken out and held up to the light of who it was, like I was talking about yesterday, if we don't unravel that and put it up in the light and say, this happened to you and it is not who you are and it has nothing to do with who you are. If we try to bypass all of that and forgive them in our own sort of confined space in secret, where does the pain go? It goes inside. And I've talked about this before in previous podcasts, that one of my most memorable moments in therapy, and it came pretty late in the game, was when my therapist really casually said, I said, I just don't know, you know, whenever I get into a PTSD spiral, whenever I'm triggered, I know what will help me, but I actively go against it. Instead of immediately putting on my shoes and going into the woods before the trigger really takes over, I get this dark hardness inside me and I tell myself, no, you don't deserve that. And it was even hard for me to say that because I didn't even have those words. You know, it was like a real breakthrough for me to be able to say, yeah, I sort of almost feel like I tell myself, no, you don't deserve that. And I realize now, you know, my triggers used to happen around May, in the spring a lot. And those were all tied up to events. And I was looking in my Facebook memories just yesterday about how I would routinely, around the time of the triggers, come down with a terrible, like really, you know, bedridden illness. And I'm physically pretty healthy person. And it was always mysterious, but I would get super sick. Like I would get kidney infections and stuff. And I would get incredibly sick around this time. And it has to do with, of course, internalizing enormous amounts of stress and trauma, like I talked about yesterday. But it also had to do with me literally not taking care of myself. I would stop drinking water. I would stop eating, not consciously, not like, oh, I'm going to starve myself to death. But I just would be so depressed and still and sort of paralyzed in bed under my covers that I couldn't even bring myself to have a sip of water. And I do have a condition where I need to drink a lot of water or eat or exercise or, you know, talk to people. I just couldn't do those things. And there was a part of it which was kind of a natural response to trauma, but there was also this part of it that was me subconsciously turning that anger and that pain inwards and saying, you deserve, and trying to kill that pain inside of me instead of putting it outside to be destroyed. I hope that that's accessible. I hope that you can sort of understand the differentiation, why it is so important that we do not do the spiritual bypassing of forgive the person and all will be well. That is not how it works. There are steps. And absolutely, I believe that ultimately, forgiveness is the gift we give ourselves. Absolutely, 100%. That holding on to bitterness will serve nothing but pain and anguish, and is allowing the perpetrator to hurt us over and over again every day of our life. But you know what else? So is internalizing trauma and never telling your story and not healing. That will do the same thing. And so, to get to the path of true forgiveness and real forgiveness, we've got to tell the story. And that is, you know, in the Mormon theology, which is the one I grew up in, the forgiveness process was pretty elaborate. And one of them was making it right with whomever you harmed, right? So that's part of theology, is that you have to make it right with whomever you harmed. And if which does point to communication. And if you've tried to communicate with the person who harmed you and that's not working, and they can't be forgiven either, right? And they're not taking responsibility and they're denying it. Maybe you're doing them the biggest favor in the world by bringing it, if you're going to take a religious tack. And I'm actually talking to members of the Mormon Church who have given myself, but mostly my siblings. I think most people have given me a wide berth because I was very, very, very anti-religion at the time that I came out, understandably, I guess, who've really sort of, in my opinion, hindered my siblings' path to healing by telling them, you know, that they needed to do this kind of spiritual bypassing. Deal only with the person that harmed you. Deal with it in private. Deal with it with the brethren. Well, guess what? That was attempted. And a perpetrator can lie and can gaslight other good people in those conditions. And sometimes you just need to kind of broaden the throw the net wider in order to get anybody, somebody to believe you. And that person then will have enough people that scrutinizing the story that they have to come to terms with what they've done and ultimately do the work of repentance and forgiveness. So when you deprive people of the right to tell their story to whomever, or to broaden that scope and tell it very, very publicly, if that's what they choose to do, or that's what they've out of desperation, been forced to do, you might also be depriving the perpetrator of being forced to reckon with what they did and ultimately, you know, fix it. And I hope I haven't completely lost and turned off people who do not have any theology, who do not believe in this whole repentance, forgiveness thing, because that, you know, you are entirely valid. And my podcast is not designed towards helping perpetrators. I am not opposed to them being helped. I think that every human being deserves a chance to at a second chance of life. And I do think that perpetrators ultimately must be very desperately dark people, with horrible demons. And you know, I hope that they can overcome that. But my podcast is geared toward helping survivors, and especially ones who have chosen to help themselves by telling their story. That's just so big and so brave and so hugely helpful to the collective good. And that's basically the point that I'm trying to make today, is that everybody is better off when we tell the truth eventually, even the person that harmed us. Everybody, the truth will set you free. Whew. It's a lot, and I'm glad that I got it off my chest. Again, I'm gonna just push freaking what you call it, submit on this one, publish this one while it's still fresh and I can't second guess. As an example, I'm trying to live my truth and the truth that I'm preaching to those who are second guessing themselves and trying to manage the perceptions of a vast public who's out of their control. I truly believe that the message, the truth of the message, will receive the person it's designed to receive. And people who were always going to misunderstand you or misconstrue you will continue to do that. And that's on them and not on you. It has nothing to do with you. It's not your business. It is not your business. And as hard as it is to, you know, that sounds so flippant when we read it and we see memes like, well, other people's opinion of me is not my business. It certainly feels like your business, doesn't it? It's painful and it's hard. And I acknowledge that. And I see that. And I felt that. But ultimately, when I look back on it, and of course, that's with time tempering the sadness and tempering the trauma of it all. It's so worth it. Like I said yesterday, I'd do it 100 times over again. And I'm willing to be judged any number of things. A liar, a drama queen, an opportunist, the thing. Like, I was always surprised, you know, I thought that I thought of all the worst things people could think. And then I was sort of surprised by, like, other things that people came up with. It was pretty creative. Because I was pretty much my own harshest critic, or so I thought. But people really do a ton of backflips to make this about you rather than about them, or to disturb their own sense of peace, or to avoid triggers. People will work very, very hard. And I look back on that, and while it was unpleasant, I do it 100 times over. I do it every day. And posting these podcasts, I think, is proof that I continue to stand by what I did, and that I continue to find peace and healing and helping other people and fulfillment by telling the truth. I really do think that that backs up what I'm saying. One other thing is what I described to somebody who's struggling with the idea of coming forward with their truth is that at some point, and I do have, you know, the social media outlet that I chose to talk about what happened to me on was Facebook, and I have a pretty large following there. And of course, and I have a public page. And so even if people are not one of my followers, that thing was being shared privately so much more than I will ever be aware of. I became somewhat aware of how much more than I bargained for, but it was shared a ton. And I started to see myself, and although that felt horribly overexposed at first, and you might say, oh, well, you've chosen to live a pretty out there public life. Yeah, but I, you know, there's certain things. I don't go live when I'm sitting on the toilet, you know. There's certain things that still feel hard to share, and you prefer it weren't shared. But I started to see it as, you know what, just like celebrities, right? You see celebrities and they deal with the healthy ones seem to sort of come to a sense of peace about the fact that people will believe about them what they will, right? They'll believe with them. They will tell stories about them. They will be in these rags at the checkout counter every week. Unflattering, doctored pictures, telling lies about their marriages and their children and their pregnancies and their plastic surgeries and all these awful things, horrible, vicious, pure lies. And you see these people sort of going on, you know, I'm thinking like long established celebrities and just very calmly living their lives off. A lot of them are doing a lot of good and seemingly unaffected. And, you know, they've decided that my craft, the fact that I get to do what I love and I'm good at for enormous amounts of money and the perks of fame, they've decided that was worth it to them. They've clearly decided that's worth it to them, and they have disconnected from managing the perceptions of their haters. They're like, I have plenty of fans who love me and think I'm wonderful. And so will you, by the way. You will always have plenty of fans who love you and think you're wonderful. And the more you tell your truth, the more you will find those fans who admire you and support you and who also are grateful to you for, trailblazing and teaching them how to do it. But those celebrities have made a peace with themselves. They have made a peace with the massive advantages of fame, and they have disconnected from managing anything else. They don't care. They really don't seem to care. And, you know, maybe that was a long process for them to come to, but the quicker they do, the healthier they seem to be. And some just don't manage it. They just don't. They sort of, they'd get destroyed by it. And it's really sad when that happens. But what I tried to do was just be like, you know what? I don't have money. I certainly didn't make a single freaking penny off telling the truth, nor did I ever intend to. I know that was a cool rumor that was going around, perpetuated actually by my own family. The players, the main players in my abuse story, told a story of power, hungriness, and opportunisticness. And I must point out that I've never tried to make a single penny off my story. So that's fairly ludicrous. But I have gained something huge. And I went in there wanting to gain it too. They're right. They're right about that. They're right about me saying, I now have the power, which I did say, and they often quoted to anybody who would listen. I said that, and I meant it. I have the power of healing my own life. I have the power back to make choices for myself about how I would act. My trauma does not inform my life anymore. I have the power to be helpful. I have the power to be the kind of mother and wife and friend I've always wanted and known I really was without the trauma derailing me and taking over the driver's seat and putting me in awful places that I didn't want to be. I have the power. And I went in there power seeking. I went in there trying to take back my own power and my healing, and I got it, and I'm so grateful for that. Man alive, I'm so grateful for that. It's worth everything. It's worth everything, and it's way worth, it's just worth all the pain, it's worth all the suffering, it's worth all the rumors, it's worth any money that I could possibly make. And so that's my, my celebrity analogy is that I've disconnected from trying to manage the perceptions of other people. I am only preoccupied with what I've gained, and it is phenomenal, and I'm very grateful for it. So, this one went long without even a breath or a sip of water, and I'm sitting, I hope you know, in a 90-degree car in a driver's in the driver's seat of a 90-degree car, thankfully in the shade, but with the AC off, because I just felt so compelled to get this one out. And so I hope it's of some help to you, something in that it's pretty rambling, I'm aware, but that it's of help to you, of help to somebody you know, or will be one day. Let us all, if we have been fortunate enough not to know the sadness and the trauma of being a survivor, let us all become better supporters of survivors. Let us all show by the way we lived our lives, by the way we talk about survivors, by the way we uphold them and share stories like these and, try and change the public narrative, show our children and show people who might one day be in need of our support that we are indeed a safe place. If that's something that you can take away from this, even if this hasn't personally touched you, in any real sense, I would be so grateful. We really do need to, that's how we make this a safer civilization and society. This is how we make, because this, the more we celebrate and support survivors, the less and the more that we normalize them coming out and telling their truth to whomever they want to tell them, to tell in whatever they want to tell, as many times over as they want to tell, the more we normalize that and celebrate and support that, the more afraid our predators will be, the more, the less likely they will be to pick off people in the dark, because this survives in darkness. Predators prey in darkness, and they gamble with survivors never telling their story. And it's a pretty safe gamble for them because of the way our society works and the way survivors are so often not believed and badly treated. So takeaway is, if I'm going to give you a soundbite takeaway, it doesn't matter. You tell your truth. You're not responsible for the fallout. You are responsible for telling the truth. The truth will set you free. It will ultimately lead to your healing. Hang in there. There are going to be people on your side. And people out there, start treating survivors better. Don't tell them how to tell their stories. You are out of line. You are doing wrong, okay? No matter how much you manage to twist and manipulate your religion, this is not godly to try and shut down people or tell them how or where to tell their stories or how to manage the very critical, might I add, rage stage. And it is not also your business to try and undermine the boundaries that people who are trying to heal have set up. If somebody has drawn a boundary between folks that they do not feel are healthy for them while they try to heal, it is absolutely not your business. And it is a very, very, very wrong thing to try and violate, undermine, or question those boundaries. Don't do it. You might be very well-meaning, but this is not about the person. When you really look inside yourself, this is more about your comfort. Okay, I think I've said my piece. I love you all. Feedback, I welcome it. I don't actually look at reviews that much, but I do welcome messages by Instagram, Facebook, or my email, kirstysayer@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Please share this, or at least nuggets that have been of any worth to you, pass them along. Let's make this world safer, happier, healthier. Love you so much. You are worth healing. Bye-bye.